You are listening to Studying Pixels, a podcast on game studies and video game culture. I'm Stefan Heinrich Simond, a game studies scholar from Germany.
I'm Dan Hughes, a Japanese scholar from Texas.
And you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Dear listeners out there, we want to be honest with you. This is a pre-recorded time-out episode because, you know, sometimes it just happens when you do a weekly podcast. Sometimes you might not have the time because you're just super busy with other things. Or sometimes we might get ill and we might have to take an involuntary break. Of course, we always want to do a show on a weekly basis whenever we can, but it's not always possible. That's why we decided to go ahead and pre-record an episode that we could air in such a case. That also means that we actually have no clue what's currently going on because this is probably going to be aired months after we actually record it. So if the world is in flames, which is not entirely unlikely, then we don't know. We have no idea.
Yes, we're living in blissful ignorance of, I'm going to say, robot invasion that is likely happening right now. Something like
probably.
That.
Yeah, probably. And if this is happening, then it might even be that you particularly enjoy this episode because we decided to retreat into nostalgic memories of our childhood, video game memories of our childhood. Before we get into that, though, I want to briefly mention that this is obviously a free and independent podcast. We do rely entirely on your support, and that is why we offer you Studying Pixels Plus. This is essentially our Patreon program, and if you support us, you get three wonderful things at once. You get our sincere gratitude and the feeling of it's a good feeling of supporting an independent show. You get a lovely sticker that says, I am studying pixels and features our particularly cute mascot, Pixelcoon. And you get a monthly plus episode. Sometimes they go into deep dives on video game culture subjects. Sometimes it's a little bit more academic. Other times it actually just helps you study. So there's a wide range of things we cover in these monthly plus episodes. And if you are curious about that, then you can get Studying Pixels Plus by going to studyingpixels.com/plus to find out more.
And I should say that since this is going out into the future, that you may just be the lucky millionth patron that joins us.
Yes.
So please, for those of you on the fence about joining the most popular video game podcast in the world and in history, really, please sign up for Studying Pixels Plus.
And if we have reached that goal, then we probably are doing this as our main profession right now.
I would hope so.
Oh, that would be so good.
That would help us make the dream a reality, my friends.
What a dream. Dan, let's dive into the main story, our childhood gaming memories. I'm curious, what is your very first conscious video game memory?
So it's a very precious one to me. And when I was very young, first ever gaming console was a Game Boy Color. And that was right around the time when Pokemon was all the rage. This was maybe 96, 97, thereabouts. And I wanted Pokemon so badly. It was the only thing I could think about in my little kid brain. And so when Christmas came around, that's all I asked for, was just a Game Boy Color and one of the Pokemon games. I didn't care which one. So Christmas morning comes around, and I run out to the living room. I'm there with my mom and dad, and there's a few presents under the tree. And I open one, and I remember my mom kind of like stopping me. And the reason was because I had opened Pokemon first. So I opened the game, and maybe, I don't know, a kid might be disappointed if that were the case. But to me, it was confirmation that the next thing I was going to open was the Game Boy. And it was. And I just remember for weeks after that, playing that game, and I didn't know how to save. So I would leave my Game Boy on because I didn't want my Pokemon to go away. So that's my first ever memory.
That thing runs on batteries, doesn't it?
Double A's. Yep.
Yes.
So I a tangent memory was I think we were going to Christmas Mass or something at church, and I had just gotten my Squirtle evolved into a Wartortle, and I didn't know how to save, so I left the Game Boy in the backseat pocket of the car and was so happy that when I came back to it, it was still on, because I was thinking the entire time, it's going to turn off because I'm going to run out of battery, and it didn't, so I don't know what these happened after
have,
that. But
yeah, these things have some power. The Game Boy. The Game Boy Color especially, I think, was pretty power efficient. The original, not so much, because I had the chunky original Game Boy.
Yeah.
I never had a Game Boy Color, actually, but I do remember, I think probably 80% of my particularly nostalgic video game memories are Christmas related. I have a lot of fun memories revolving around Christmas.
I must ask now, so you have some good Christmas memories, but I think people want to know, what is your first conscious memory having to do with video games?
I just realized that I am actually a bit older than you, I fear.
Yes.
It's a little bit painful because if I think back, I can't quite say which one was the very first, but I am quite confident that I remember in my very early childhood room, sitting on the bed and playing Super Hang-On on the Sega Mega Drive.
Mm.
This was a game, I think it came out in the late 1980s, I want to say. And I must have been, I don't know, I was less than 6 years old. I was maybe 4, maybe 5 years old or something. And I played that Sega Mega Drive game where you're just on a motorcycle and you're just going down a road and you have to evade people. That game is actually also part of the, it's always in the arcades and the Yakuza games. You can play it there. And I remember that there were also arcades around where you would have this plastic motorcycle that you would sit on and control it like that, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I played it a lot in my childhood. There were so many games on the Sega Mega Drive that I played passionately before I even had an SNES or a Game Boy.
Isn't it kind of I don't know if you share this feeling, but you almost don't think of it as a, because you're so young, you don't think of it as a video game. Similar to how you don't think of a maybe your favorite movie as a kid, you don't think of it as a quote movie. You think of it as its own entity that you're engaging with, this very special thing. And I remember feeling that way about a lot of games.
Yeah, I think I did that as well. And of course, I didn't have an understanding about how video games work and how the industry works and how video game culture works. I was just a tiny little brat and wanted to play video games all day. Really, that's how I was. And I was such a brat that I remember, because we've been starting off this conversation with Christmas, I remember that I had a big wish for Christmas once when I was maybe also like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years old, I think. Mm. I was wishing for The Lion King on the SNES.
Oh.
The Lion King, which it later turned out to be quite a tough game. That game
I was going to say.
Challenging.
Yeah.
But I loved it. And the thing was, I remember that on Christmas, I actually got that game on the 24th, because in Germany, you know, it's like the evening of the 24th. Is where you open your presents. It's not on the 25th in the morning.
Yeah.
And the thing about opening presents in the evening is amazing, because it just brings so much tension to that evening that then is released once you can finally open those presents and you realize it's exactly the game that you were wishing for. But then it comes with the trouble of you having to go to bed.
I didn't want to.
I went to bed and I was laying in bed and I was so nervous because I knew that down in the living room, there was this SNES console with the Lion King. And I snuck downstairs in my PJs, sitting down with like very low lights only. But apparently the sound of the game was a little bit too loud. I woke up my uncle, who suddenly showed up behind me. Oh. Like, what are you doing here? Go off to bed. It's like 4 in the morning. And I'm like, just quickly turned it off and ran for it.
Oh, that's so cute though. Did you do the blanket over the screen to try to make sure that light didn't get out and bother anybody?
No, I don't think that was necessary because the living room was quite separate from the bedroom.
Gotcha.
But we had family members staying over. I felt I was safe, but I should have been smarter. I should have used headphones. that was my mistake. That was my mistake. And the music's so good in that game. You know, it's like, imagine you're like a parent. And then in the middle of the night, you gave your child the Lion King. In the middle of the night, you wake up like... Jesus, it's like 4 in the morning. What is that child doing?
Haunted by 16-bit Disney music.
Oh, that was great, though. That was really great. There's so many Christmas-related things.
There's something so precious about that because I think maybe your family was similar in this way, but the Christmas Day was the one day where it was sort of allowed that you could play the game all day for my family. Because usually, you know, there would be some restrictions, maybe an hour in the evening or something like that after schoolwork is done. But, you know, Christmas Day is special. You play with your toys on Christmas Day, and the toy was Pokemon.
Yeah, the toy was Pokemon, the toy was the Lion King. The toy was actually, in the case of almost all Christmases that I can remember as a child, it was almost always video game related. Mm. I remember, for example, that one Christmas I said, I'm not going to wish for anything else, just give me video games. And I think that was on the first PlayStation. And I got 3 video games. I got, like, I think Tomb Raider 4, Drive 2, and one more video game, Mission Impossible. Yes, Mission Impossible.
Ah, yes.
And it's like, it's always like that. And you know what? My parents, they always used to do something. They always used to pretend like they weren't able to get what I was looking for. They were always like, we can find a PlayStation 2. I'm so sorry, we tried our very best. But so just that you don't expect it, so that you're not disappointed. We couldn't get one. We got you something else. So don't be sad. And then I'm like, I see this box, and then you open it and say, it's a place. You know? You're like, it's
the best feeling in the world when you see that console. You know, I have a lot of Christmas memories too. And I was much the same, where our family would do, you know, you would have maybe one big present you would ask for. And it just so happens that the one big present was often a console or something like that. And I remember my grandfather once, he bought me, I can't remember what game it was. It was a Game Boy game though. And he bought it for me. And when I opened it, he was so surprised that it was so small. And he just said, I spent $60 on that.
That piece of plastic trash. Yeah.
But it was such a precious thing, because this is another thing that happened to us, my brothers and I, all the time, is that anytime we would ask for a console, back in the days of memory cards, we would be very clear, we need a memory card so that we can save games. And every time, without fail, we would get the console, which we were very happy for, but we would not get a memory card. And so it would be a month and a half of either leaving the console on or starting the games all over again.
Oh, I know the pain. I think it was with the PlayStation 2 when I got that, which is, by the way, it's an amazing thing, a very dedicated thing to give to your child. Like, a console is expensive. It's like, yes. How spoiled I actually was as a child. I only realized it in hindsight. And I think that at the time, though, I think my parents got me a PlayStation 2, but they were not aware that you needed to get, like, games for it. And sure. So I had the console, and I had only the demo disc of the, like, it was just like, you know, some kind of Tekken 3 or whatever, I don't know. And right. I played that demo like for an eternity, or at least it felt to me like an eternity. Before I could actually get my first game, I played the demos over and over and over again.
That was my only interaction with the game Medieval, was a demo disc that I had to play because I had nothing else. But I loved every second of it.
Yeah, you learn the demo by heart. I mean, what you what you're going to do. when I was a child, the rule was always that I get a new video game if I was a good child, by the way, if I was behaving, and if I had finished the one that I got before. Like, I couldn't say just like 2 weeks later, I want a new video game, but it was the first question that would come is, but have you finished Ocarina of Time already? And I'm like, no, then go back and play that. Okay.
I have to ask, because you've mentioned this before, when we've talked about trophies and completing games and things like that. I wonder, did your parents at some point, if you asked for a new game, would they go into the living room with you and say, show me the credits, I need to see the end of this game?
No, they didn't. I don't think they ever really checked on it, but I was always honest about it. Although I think that there were such incidents, like, you know, back in the day, there wouldn't be no such thing, no meta games such as trophy tracking. But I remember Super Mario 64, which, by the way, was absolutely insane. When I wanted that game so bad, and we didn't have an N64, that I used to go to a store in the down the street every single day, every single afternoon, because they had one. And obviously you couldn't save there. It was just like on display in the shop. And I would go there every day and I would play Super Mario 64, always like the first three levels or something. But there it was actually the case that you could collect stars in every world. You would basically jump through a painting and then you collect stars in every world. And there, I think the kind of rule of thumb was only if you've collected all the stars, then you can get a new game.
Well, I love that they did that. I think my parents had this idea that the game that they got was it. Like, that, what do you mean? That's the game, you know? I don't think they quite conned that, like, more were coming. So it was always if I didn't want to spend my own money and I wanted to get some help on it or something, I had to convince them. And I feel like I did a lot of elevator pitches for stories.
Yeah.
Where I would say, no, mom, you know, he's a marsupial. He's a thing called a bandicoot, and he's collecting these fruit and crystals and stuff. And, you know, I'd have to explain the game to kind of get my mom's buy-in to it so that she'd get on board with it.
I remember doing that a lot in video rental stores because for me, it was always like a highlight. It was almost like a ritual that not every weekend, but every other weekend, maybe my mother, she would like, my parents, they love films. And so they would, you know, drive over to the next town where there was a big video rental store. And they obviously had a huge video game department. And I was allowed to choose one video game that I would then play this weekend. So really my weekends and the games that I played were really determined by which game I chose that afternoon. And I remember always like going along these lines and I would look at the games and I would turn around the boxes and read what's on them. And of some of these games I had heard, of others I had not. But then I always had to convince my parents, especially if it was above my age rating, that, you know, like, no, I mean, Grand Theft Auto, no, it's not that bad. It's like you don't really shoot people. You'd mostly like driving around, you know.
It's sightseeing.
My mother always, yes. It's all just, you know, it's just funny and so on. And it's like, and my friend at school also has it. And his parents have allowed it.
Yeah.
Classic argument.
That would often backfire on me, though, because my parents would say things like, okay, well, yeah, maybe Alex's parents are allowing him to play this kind of thing, but you are not Alex and we are not his parents.
Yes. It's, you know, it's interesting that parents all over the world, because we are from very different parts of the world, use exactly the same reasoning. Just like children use exactly the same reasoning. That's kind of cute, I must say. And I don't know how I would be if I was a parent, if my child was like, 8 years old, asking me to get GTA 8 by then, probably. Or probably will be GTA 6. Who knows when that will come out.
Let's be conservative, yeah.
And then it's like, yeah, it's 18. And I'm like, I know exactly what Grand Theft Auto is.
Oh, I think that maybe you had a similar experience, because I think that my parents kind of grew to understand video games more as I continued to play them, to the point where, you know, I think that my maybe my dad especially had a hard time kind of understanding why I would be glued to a Game Boy or sitting in front of a TV and this game. And I think it took him a while to kind of understand that, oh, this is really not so different from when I watch, you know, a couple of movies back to back. It's engaging with stories. It's a hobby. It's something that, you know, it's more than just playing with Legos. It's engaging with narrative in this way. And I think once my parents kind of saw the merit in that, it was a lot easier to convince them of certain things.
Did your parents not play themselves at all?
Oh, no. No, I don't think. Not unless there are some secrets they're going to reveal to me when I would go to bed, that they would stay up playing Legend of Dragoon all night. I don't know.
It's like, Mama, I've defeated the boss already. It's like, I've defeated it 2 weeks ago, actually.
Get on my level, kid.
Yeah. Get good.
Get good.
But no, that was actually the case for me, because one of the fondest memories I have, and also very formative memories, that when we played Super Mario World on the SNES, I was still a kid, and it was kind of almost like a family venture that we would sit together in the living room. And it was, I would say, primarily my mother and me. It is, and that is still the case. Like, my mother still loves to play video games. Last year, I brought my Switch over for Christmas, and she literally nonstop played on the Switch various different games. We played Super Mario Party together, and whenever we were not in a Super Mario Party session, she would play other games, like retro games on the Switch emulators that she remembered from her past. So she's really into video games as well. And we used to have this kind of it was like a little bit of competition, because it was about who would beat Bowser first. It was actually my mother. And also cooperation, because you could play this game with two people, and it would always mean, I remember, you know, it's like a difficult level, and then one butts their head against this difficult level, and the other character goes all the way back to the beginning to collect lives.
Yeah.
And give it over to the other person. And we always like switched roles. That was just one of the experiences in my life where I realized how games can bring people together, how it means forming connections, not only to the story and the characters of the games, yes, but also to other people. And that was really precious.
That's really beautiful. I love that she's so invested. I think that my the closest thing is that I have two younger brothers. One of them is 4 years younger than I am, and the other is 8 years younger. So,
It's quite a span.
It is. And my brother, who's 8 years younger than I am, Matt, he and I, he loves The Legend of Zelda, and always has since he was young. And I think that was a really important thing for us to connect on when now, I mean, you know, we're both much older, so the age gap doesn't feel as huge. But when I'm 16 and he's 8, that's a big gap. And it was always nice that we could share time playing Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess and talk about them. And we still do to this day. And I think that is it's kind of a great equalizer, depending on the age gap between people, as everybody enjoys the story the same.
I think so. And it is a bonding, a way of bonding also for siblings, because I remember I played a lot of games together with my sister, my younger sister. She's 2 years younger than me, so actually she's now 31. So she's still a bit older than you, I think. But the thing is that I remember when we played Kingdom Hearts together, the first Kingdom Hearts game, and I remember that we were so excited for when Kingdom Hearts 2 would come out, that when it came out, we got it for, I think, the PlayStation 2, if I recall correctly. And my sister played that game in one weekend. She did not do anything else. I think it was like a long weekend, like 3 days. She didn't do anything else. I can't recall here in leaving her seat. You know, it was just through the entire weekend, she powered through that game and was so in love with it. And you know what? She still is. Because just recently she told me, like, Stefan, I got a PlayStation 5. And I'm like, congratulations. That's really amazing. So for me, it's just interesting that video games have always been a part of my life, early childhood on, and also of my, you know, family. And we would talk about video games, and my mother still would come to me even nowadays and would say, like, I want to play like a new cool game on my tablet, and do you have something that you can recommend, and so on. Yeah, I guess that it's very, it's much a world of its own, because I know that other families and other people are not like that at all. And I don't know, for me, it's just a very interesting realization to have.
I think it's special in a way that sharing a love of film or books is different. And I think the obvious answer is just because you can both engage with it in a way that's so different from other media. But I mean, you could have seen this coming, I'm sure. But speaking of Kingdom Hearts, I have many, many great memories with that game. And it's always been a very formative game. Maybe this is something we can talk about, because it's such a long running series. It's been formative for me in different stages of my life. So when the first one came out, I was such a huge Final Fantasy fan that I thought, oh, what is the, you know, Mickey Mouse and Final Fantasy, this is lame. And my younger brother didn't think that way, and he loved it. And it was his love of it that got me into it. He was so excited about it that we shared that together. And then, speaking of Kingdom Hearts 2, my mom knew how big a fan I was of it, of that series. She didn't know anything about it. She just knew that I wouldn't shut up about it, which she still knows today. And she took time out of her day. I remember she went to a game store and stood in line to get Kingdom Hearts 2 for me, and took me out of school for a day so that I could play it. And it was at a time where...
That is so sweet.
Yeah, it was very special. I think it was at a time where I was not doing so well. I felt very lonely. And she recognized that and said, you know, what might help is a session of this game. So it was a very special thing. And I think games, no matter what, doesn't have to be Kingdom Hearts. It could be anything. Those connections are so special.
Mums are amazing.
They sure are.
They sure are. Yeah, they sure are. And I've got a little bit of a memory that's kind of bittersweet, I must say, because I mentioned before that I often would go to the video rental store to get games. And as I grew a little bit older, we would get games, and we would, I don't know whether I'm confessing to a crime here. I think I'm doing that, but it's probably,
it's the probably the statute of limitations is over on this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is over long since, but of course we would get, like, you know, PC games, you know, when I was like 12, 14, maybe 16 years old, and that kind of time frame. And we would instantly rip them.
Of course.
And we would return them the same day. We'd be like, thank you very much.
That kind
those were still the days.
That kind of magical time where maybe the clerk knew what you were doing, but maybe they didn't.
Yeah, maybe they didn't care, because it's like, okay, it's just, you know, you got to give me your €2 or two, like, German mark. It was that at the time. You got to give me that anyway. Don't care what you do with the game. Although one time they did care, because we actually, I think we lent Operation Flashpoint, like a military strategy game, a military simulation. We really loved that game, and we wanted to play it with, I think, the three people. It was like my cousin and a friend of us. And we got that game from the video rental store, and we wanted to take it out of the package, and we broke the disc in half.
Oh, no.
While doing that. Oh, that was hardcore. And then we had to go to that rental store, and we have to be like, we are so sorry. We just, you know, big time broke that game. Yeah, well, we had to pay for the entire thing. And in exchange for paying the full price for that game, we got the empty package.
Oh, well, all right. As a reminder.
Yeah, it's kind of a bittersweet memory, because, if I may say so, I know it's a tough subject to address, but just as I've been thinking about, you know, my childhood gaming memories, I thought of this moment, and I thought that the friend that I spoke of, I'm not sure whether he was the one who actually broke the disc or whether it was my cousin, but we were at my friend's place. He actually is not alive anymore. He took his life. And that's why it's a very bittersweet memory, because I just realized while thinking back to it what a kind of time that was.
Yeah.
And what a kind of person he was. And I just thought, you know, I just mentioned that a little bit on the side as a shout out to someone who's no longer with us anymore.
Sorry to hear about that. I know exactly the kind of memory that you're talking about, where you almost in the moment, you almost think to yourself, I will remember this. And I think when you look back on it, when people are no longer with us, or maybe you've gone your separate ways for one reason or another, it is a little hard to think back on that time.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, it is also precious, and I'm very grateful to have those memories and to have made these experiences, because that's really what remains after all. And yeah, that's why I'm very happy that we accidentally broke that Operation Flashpoint disc. And I'm happy to report that I think that same day or the next day, we still got a copy of the game in some other way. I don't remember exactly how, but it was the time where kind of people would just have ripped files of games on their hard drive and would just say, like, I'm just, you know, sending it over to you, or, you know, burn it on a disc and then give it to you. So yeah, we still managed to have our Operation Flashpoint multiplayer session.
Oh boy. Yeah, I have, I mentioned, Legend of Dragoon earlier, which is unfortunately mostly forgotten JRPG that came out in around 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
It was kind of eclipsed by Final Fantasy VII and VIII around that time, I think. But it's such a special game to me. And I think that a big reason is because the first time I got it was I rented it with a friend of mine who unfortunately is... You know, we've grown very much apart, just different kinds of lives. I mean, it's like you do with any 12-year-old friend, I suppose. But I think about he had a TV in his living room and then a smaller TV. And we would play a game on the small TV and watch television shows on the big TV. And I remember loving this game so much that I actually said, let's shut that off and switch so that we can play this on the big TV. And that game still holds a lot of great memories for me. It's one that I wish would, speaking of remasters and remakes of, you know, any kind, if that game were to get one, I think it would do gangbusters, but it's just for me.
It is a single player game, isn't it?
Yes. It's really a kind of JRPG that they don't make anymore, I think.
Mm. The interesting thing about the anecdote is, I think that when I was a child, and I assume you have the same kind of experience, at least from what you say now, it was quite common to play through single-player games together.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's something that... I mean, it may just be rose-tinted glasses looking back on games like that kind of nostalgically, but... I actually had a theory when I was maybe 13, 14, which was you could not defeat the final boss if you were alone. You had to have a friend who was there to help, and you'd do it a couple times. And I think it must have just been that I only beat Ansem in Kingdom Hearts when my friend was there, or Sin in Final Fantasy X when my friend was there. So I had in my head that I can't do it if my friend isn't here.
But that is so cool, because it kind of perfectly syncs up with the whole theme of Kingdom Hearts and many other video games as well. The importance of friendship.
Yes, and working together. It was, yeah, I used to think that all the time. When I would get to the final boss, I'd say, I got to call up Alex and have him come over, because I can't do this.
And that is so cool, man. I wonder... We don't do this anymore, really, right? I mean, of course, multiplayer gaming is it's bigger than it has ever been before, but just sitting together and playing a single player game, maybe cycling through the controller a bit, or someone is just, you know, watching and calling out enemies or whatever, you know, and just enjoying that as well. Because I personally always enjoyed watching someone play almost as much as I enjoy playing it. So I think I think that's kind of something I would love to do again one day. Yeah. Just playing a game, a single player game together.
It is a lot of fun, I think, because there's nothing quite like commentating on a game when you're playing it with somebody. And you do kind of lose that when it's online multiplayer only.
Exactly. It's a whole different experience. And maybe that's also at least a last thing that I would briefly like to mention.
Yeah.
Of course, LAN parties were a thing.
Oh, yes.
They were a thing. They were a highlight of the month. They were such a thing that we, the very first time when we tried to do a LAN party, we were just two people. It was me and the same cousin who broke that Operation Flashpoint disc, the very same person. And we had set up a small space in my, like on my desk in my childhood's room, at my children's room. And we would place our computers next to one another and try to connect them. We'd never done it before. And we had network cards that we hadn't even implemented in the computer yet. So we still had to open them up. It was like a whole process. It took us the entire afternoon up until late in the evening when we finally managed, after much, you know, like fumbling with the settings, and then you had to like set an IP address and all of these things, because it doesn't just work just like that. You need to do a whole lot of configuration and no just simple internet access where you can look things up, but you need to figure it out on your own.
Right.
And I remember then we jumped into Half-Life Deathmatch. And the first time we actually saw each other's characters, we were in such awe. Nobody fired a shot. We were just standing there being like, wait, is that you?
Yeah.
It's like, I think so. Well, can you jump? Whoa.
Just so happy that it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't fight each other. But it was just an amazing experience. It was a sense of, you know, kind of an experience of presence, to be co-present together, the two of us, in this world of this game that was just completely transcendental, I would say.
I think that we definitely take it for granted now, because it's so easy to play online with people. We don't even think about it, but I mean, yeah, what you just described, I think a lot of us who are old enough, I guess, have the experience of, all right, you're going to be over for the weekend. Saturday will be us trying to figure out how the computers work, and Sunday will be us playing the game. Yeah.
Yeah. For us, it was more like we meet on Friday.
Mm.
We set up the computers. Then this was a little bit later, you know, being like 15, 16, 17.
Yeah.
Then we get completely hammered. Then we have like a house party when just some people would just like be a little bit wasted in the corner and just play some Counter-Strike on the side.
Yes. Yes.
And then at 3 a.m, when you can't sleep, then you'd sit down and play like an extensive session of Age of Empires until the sun goes up. That was like our experience of a LAN party.
you've just unlocked a memory in me, which was very similar, except it was a game where I can't remember what it was, but it was just a game where you could drive in like a monster truck and explore a rendering of the Earth, and just playing that together, trying to find each other in it. And I don't even know if it was possible, but just this memory of spending. Maybe 6 hours of just driving around and having a fun time sitting next to each other in the same room.
Ah, that's cool. It sounds like a very chill experience. And it also reminds me of the fact of having a challenge that you're not sure whether you can actually overcome. It is something that happened a lot to me when I was a child, but also during these, you know, I remember during those LAN party sessions when we actually managed to play Operation Flashpoint together. I don't know whether anyone else has ever played the Operation Flashpoint multiplayer, but we really loved it for some reason. Yeah. Even though we couldn't get past the first mission. I don't know whether there are even any other missions than the first one. Because it was just so hard. It was so difficult. And we like really tried hard to get into the mindset of that military simulation. We would be like, one would be the commander and would assign commands and would be super strategic. And we still always got killed. And it just had this, games often to me had this kind of vibe that you were not sure whether they can even be beaten, whether you can even get through, and what's behind that you know, heavily guarded door. It's almost like a sense of mystery that games do not really have to me at the moment anymore, because I just see through the mechanics pretty well. But that was just an impressive and very important experience, I think.
I agree, and I think that it's so fun to think back on these times, because if you engage with a game nowadays, very few games have excited me in the same way that a game may have when I was maybe between 8 and 13. And a great example of it is, since I was such a big JRPG fan, I didn't realize that sometimes there are bosses you have to lose to. And so that feeling of, how am I ever going to get past this, only to have the rug pulled out from under me of, oh no, you're not supposed to. But then every now and again, there would be a game where you're not supposed to, but you can if you do it just right. And the game will kind of chide you for for beating it in that sense. I think that I've only ever had that experience in my modern gaming in playing Dragon Quest XI. It's the only game where I thought 11-year-old Dan would have absolutely lost his mind playing this game for all of the cool things it does.
That is so cute, because at such an early age, one would not see through the scheme that the video game is pulling, and you just think, oh no, he's defeating me, oh no. And then it's suddenly like, da 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 da, and it was like a dream, or it was just like the setup of the story, and then it really starts, and the title of the game appears. And nowadays, when that happens, you're just like, oh, it's that again?
Yeah.
Come on, just take my abilities away from me. I'm going to earn them back in a moment. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it is. It's the Mega Man X syndrome, right? Where when you play Mega Man X for the first time and Zero comes in to save you, it's incredible. And you think, maybe I'll be like him if I keep playing the game. But as an adult, obviously, you would see that and say, I see, that is the goal. I must become like Zero.
Yeah. Oh, and you just mentioned that you've always been a great JRPG fan. And the interesting thing is, I think I was a great JRPG fan all my life as well, without knowing it.
Oh, yeah.
Played a lot of Japanese role-playing games. I was in love with the Final Fantasy series. I never really realized that I was playing primarily Japanese games. I actually have, like, Final Fantasy is super important in my biography, because at the time when I had a tough time in school and I was going through, you know, like a phase of being bullied and being rather excluded and so on, Final Fantasy 8, 9, and 10, those were the three games that gave me quite a lot of strength. 10 was then more at the end of this kind of phase, but especially encountering Squall Leonard in Final Fantasy 8, this kind of shy, introverted dude who resents everyone and has to learn to open up and form relationships and accept other people for who they are. That was such a valuable lesson and so formative for my own character, I think.
Did you find playing those games that you would be so invested in the people in it that you really did feel as if you were going to kind of like have a meeting with your friends
in certain circumstances.
Yeah,
very much so. I was, when the characters in Final Fantasy VIII were on a train discussing the next mission, I was in there with them.
Yeah,
and I tried a lot to also evoke that feeling, because I would often be, you know, I would be down after school and so on, and I would just like, you know, pull down the blinds in front of the windows and just, you know, shut myself in a little bit. And then I would just experience these kinds of stories and empathize with the characters and find a kind of understanding in the game that I felt like I could not get outside of the game. So it was very much escapism, but at the same time, not just that, because it was not just escaping. It was also a sense of confronting the rejection and dealing with the rejection that I had faced during my daily school routine.
I think we had very similar moments like that stuff on, because Final Fantasy X was very important to me. I think that it's now an infamous scene where the main character Tidus and Yuna are overlooking a city, and Yuna says, "Oh, I want my journey to be full of laughter." And Tidus kind of makes himself laugh, and he's go ha 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 like that.
Yeah.
And it's played up as a, like, people I think misunderstand that scene, because it's played up as a big meme nowadays that, oh, voice acting was so silly back then. And I always, I take umbrage to that, because that to me was such a specific moment where I confronted, as you said, something about myself, which was sometimes you have to put on a brave face and make light of something. And it's as easy as smiling or laughing and making other people around you uncomfortable, you know? I think yes. that's kind of the beautiful thing that you say. It's not escapism. It is a way of kind of dealing with what you may have been dealing with at the time.
Ah. Man, that was a game. I loved that. That was so beautiful.
Yeah.
Shall we wrap it up for today? Because I think we could like talk forever about our childhood gaming memories. Yeah. But of course, dear listeners, we also want to hear yours. So if you are willing to share some of your childhood gaming memories and maybe what they mean to you when you think back nowadays, then you can do that. You can obviously comment on studyingpixels.com under this very show. You can find us on Reddit, where you can write a longer post, or you can tweet out to us or write us a message or a comment on Instagram. And of course, if you want to, you know, send us an email that is not directly published publicly, or that we might be able to refer to in a later episode, then feel free to submit your thoughts to podcast@studyingpixels.com. Don't forget that you can support us by getting Studying Pixels Plus. You can find all the information on studyingpixels.com/plus. Yeah, we're looking forward to talk again, then probably more up-to-date and more in the present than we did this week. See you then. Bye-bye.